The LA Screening's fascinating 50-year history has helped and challenged MIPTV, is the title of this article by Dom Serafini from the May edition of Video Age magazine. Even though it is difficult to pinpoint exactly when the LA Screening started, some retired TV executives designate 1963 as the year in which Canadian broadcasters began making the trip to Los Angeles, not in May, but in February. In 1964, when Jack Singer, then at ABC International, and Michael J. Solomon of MCA got the Latins involved, the event did not have a name. Later, it was referred to as the Screenings, which became the May Screenings, when in 1978 it was moved to the month of May. In 1983, Video Age began calling the event the LA Screenings, a name that thereafter became accepted worldwide. The British arrived in LA with the BBC and ITV in 1967, followed by the Australians as the third and fourth groups to join the screenings, while Japan was the fifth country, with the earliest record of their participation in 1972. Coincidentally and unbeknownst to each other, MIPTV was also born in 1963 in France, a market that would always be entwined with the screenings. Canadians decided to screen the U.S. TV network's new fare after privately owned CTV came into the picture in 1961. Up until then, public network CBC was the only game in town, and usually distributors like David McLaughlin went to them and not the other way around. In 1960, McLaughlin was recruited from All Canada Radio and Television to head Warner Brothers TV Distribution's Toronto office in anticipation of a local syndication business. In addition to its network executives, CTV went to LA with its affiliate stations, and a total of about 10 people were housed at the Beverly Hills Hotel. Both CBC and CTV stayed in L.A. for up to 10 days. Norman Horowitz, at that time with Screen Gem Columbia, recalled that among the Canadians, there was also a buyer from CHCH, an independent TV station serving Toronto from Hamilton, which had previously served as a CBC affiliate. Philip Pip Wedge, at CTV in 1965, remembered that ITO was also competing for programming with CTV. ITO was an association formed by CTV affiliates to buy additional programming outside the network from the Americans starting in 1962. The network lamented the situation, and ITO was asked to refrain from bidding for new shows. Currently, Wedge is president of the Toronto-based Canadian Communications Foundation, and he's researching the early days of the LA screenings. According to David McLaughlin, Canadians screened new pilots from all of the studios and some independent producers. They went wherever there was a new show to be screened. That's why they stayed for so many days, he said. However, Horowitz recalled, my boss would not allow me to screen until the networks had said yes or no. What mattered at that moment were the Canadians only. Nobody at the studios cared about international television early on. Nobody at the studios cared about the upfronts. It was an individual, studio-by-studio decision regarding when to screen. The screenings were a byproduct of another development in the U.S. TV industry. In 1962, ABC, then the weakest network, came up with the idea of premiering all of its programs in a single week following the Labor Day holiday, the first Monday in September. CBS and NBC followed suit, and by the mid-1960s, the new TV season was a major national event, marking the end of summer. The fall debut of new season programs helped to create the upfronts in New York City by requiring advertiser commitments by the spring. Therefore, the pilots had to be produced in L.A. by February. Recalled Jim Rosenfield, "When I joined CBS in 1965, CBS's upfront was Washington's birthday holiday on February 22nd, and that continued for 13 years before moving to May with much more elaborate presentations plus parties. As was previously mentioned, the Latins entered the screenings in 1964 when Michael J. Solomon, who had just joined MCA, now NBC Universal, from the Lima, Peru office of United Artists, approached Jack Singer in New York City. Singer was responsible for programming the many TV stations that ABC owned overseas and reported to Don Coyle, president of ABC International. Solomon asked Singer if he could invite to the MCA studios in Los Angeles the managers of the 10 or so TV stations that ABC owned in Latin America to screen and buy on the spot the new shows that MCA was producing, mainly for ABC, but also for other U.S. TV networks. Solomon recalled, "About 20 TV executives from Latin America went to Los Angeles just to screen MCA product. They paid their own way and stayed in L.A. for just 3 days. Only a year or so later, the other studios began inviting the Latins to screen their new product as well. In 1964, Pedro Simoncini was running one of ABC's TV stations, Channel 11, in Buenos Aires, Argentina, that in 1989 became Telefe's flagship station and was part of the first LATAM contingent in L.A. Of the early screenings, he remembered that they visited only MCA, and that, starting in 1967, he reviewed the new U.S. season at MIPTV in April instead of at the screenings in L.A. The fact that the L.A. screenings began in February was documented in a 1977 article by Television Radio Age, which reported that up until the late 60s, U.S. advertising agencies viewed all the network's pilots in late February. This was confirmed by Solomon. "We had the Latins visiting originally in February, and it became May later on, as the Nets decided on their schedule at that time." This was corroborated by Herb Lazarus, who at that time was at 20th Century Fox. "The networks originally screened the pilots in February, and the schedule was put together soon after. In the 70s, it changed, and the networks didn't put their schedule together until May." Marcel Vinet, whose first screenings was in 1976, while working with Mexico's Protela Televisa, remembers, "The change was not that important to Latin buyers due to the fact that the new U.S. season always started in September. The reason the networks moved the upfronts from February to May was due to December 1978 AFTRA and SAG union strikes that delayed the new season. However, prior to 1978, the screenings moved around the months of February, March, 1968, 1970, 1971, March-April, 1972, 1973, and April 1974. Recalled Solomon, "The screening dates were set when we were told the pilots would be ready to screen. As for the sequence of arrivals, Horowitz remembers that Britain's BBC and ITV buyers were the first Europeans to screen in L.A., and as a rule, they wanted to screen more than just the pilots and meet with the producers. As ITV buyer Leslie Hollowell posted online at www.leslieholowell.com, his first trip to Hollywood was in 1967. Before that, he went to New York City to screen new U.S. network product. Horowitz recalled that the Australians followed the British. Similarly, Pip Wedge said that in 1975, the Australians were there, but after the Canadians. The screenings remained in May for over 10 years, and it was during that period that international TV executives and buyers alike began to refer to them as the May screenings. Before 1978, there was no name attached. Then, as Video Age's 1991 issue attests, the screenings moved to late May, lasting until June 27th. By then, the screenings had developed into a well-oiled machine and possibly the world's only organic market created and developed on its own, like Paul Dirac's antimatter, and graciously evolved in accordance with a changing environment and without any input or guidance. At one point, it lasted 4 weeks, with the Canadians and Europeans the first groups to go, as early as May 28th in 1991, followed by the Latins, May 31st, the Pan-Pacific Territories, June 3rd, and South Africa ending on June 27th. Vinay recalled, "For us it lasted 2 weeks, as only one studio presented its shows each day, and only from Monday to Friday. No Saturday or Sunday was involved." Similarly, according to Pip Wedge, from 1975 to 1981, the Canadians stayed for 2 weeks, and always in the month of April. After that, they were closer to 1 week in the month of May. The changing length of the screenings throughout the years was buyer-driven up until 2000, when the studios began instructing their regional offices to book their clients' screenings within a 10-day period, giving them 2 or 3 openings. Recalled Alan Silverback, then head of domestic and international TV distribution at 20th Century Fox since 1961, the buyers just showed up. Only later, when the number increased, we started to invite them. Susan Bender, then at Metro Media, recalled that from 1980, she invited clients to screen at KTTV, followed by a cocktail party on the station's rooftop terrace. And in 1984, Metro Media began having the stars of their shows, Fantasy Island, Charlie's Angels, etc., meet with the buyers. Prior to today's fabulous studio extravaganzas, parties were held at executives' homes, like in 1985 at Paramount's Mel Harris and later at Joe Lucas's. Another attraction in the mid-1980s, but just for Australian buyers, were the screenings and cocktail at the home of B. Arthur, star of Buena Vista's, now Disney Distribution, the Golden Girls. In 1989, house parties became elaborate events for thousands of guests, like the ones hosted by Michael J. Solomon, then heading Warner Brothers TV International, and Chaim Saban, then owner of Saban Entertainment. Starting in 1993, with increased buyer participation, these parties were moved to the studio's lots and carefully scheduled so as not to conflict with each other. By 1983, in addition to the 6 studios, on the buyer's schedules were other indie companies such as D.L. Taffner, ITC, Viacom, and Embassy. In 1990, the indies at the L.A. screenings numbered 34, with such distributors as New World, screening at the Westward Marquee Hotel, now the W, Leda Films at the Marriott Hotel, Westinghouse at the Century Plaza, and World Vision, screening at the Warner Hollywood Studios, all serving some 200 buyers, including 100 broadcasters from 16 Latin countries. 4 years later, Video Age registered 450 program buyers from 55 countries and 80 distribution companies. Last year, there were some 1,500 buyers, while the number of sellers was still 80, including the studios. In 1983, Video Age wrote, "The Los Angeles screenings in early May are increasingly popular. At that time, MIP TV was held April 22nd to 28th. Interestingly, the ups and downs of MIP TV have been closely linked to the LA screenings. When the U.S. TV networks announced their schedule in late February in the 60s and 70s, the U.S. studios went to Cannes in April with plenty of new product to sell. Furthermore, MIP-TV increased its importance to the studios in the 70s because, as indicated in a TV Radio Age article, in February and March 1977 alone, the U.S. TV networks introduced 10 new series. MIP continued to be viable when it was held in early April, and the L.A. screenings took most of the month of June. However, starting in 2001, the screenings moved back completely to May, and that's when rambling about MIP started to surface again, especially when MIP's dates began heading toward the middle of April. The L.A. screening's fascinating 50-year history has helped and challenged MIP-TV was the title of that article by Dom Serafini from the May edition of Video Age magazine.